Hello. You're about to listen to one of our audio-only webcasts, which was taken from one of our popular video webcasts. We'd love to get your feedback on how valuable and effective this format is for you. After you listen, please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio/survey to complete a quick evaluation. That's webcastaudio.com/survey. Thanks for the feedback and enjoy this podcast.
Hello, I would like to welcome you to today's TechNet webcast, Secure Application Publishing with ISO Server 2006. For more Microsoft webcasts, you can go to microsoft.com/webcasts. I would now like to introduce today's presenter, Chris Avis. Chris Avis began his career at Microsoft with a brief stint on the Windows NT networking team. From there, he quickly moved to the Microsoft Back Office Server and Windows Small Business Server support team, where he has been ever since. Chris is an MCT who shares his broad knowledge of the installation, networking, configuration, and management that Microsoft products require. Chris considers himself a Texan, although he was born elsewhere. Chris, I'll hand it over to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Eric, and welcome to everyone that has joined us on the webcast. Looks like we have a pretty small, tidy group today, and I am the only one on the webcast. So what I am going to be doing with this particular webcast is I'm going to spend some time at the end of the session doing some Q&A. I'll answer questions that come into the queue live over voice. If there's a whole bunch in the queue and we run out of time for the recording, I'll answer those. I'll stay online to do some text-based Q&A in these sessions. So I would encourage you to send your questions in through the question manager. And if I see something during some of the breaks that I can address, I'll certainly try to do that. But I will probably answer most of that at the end of the session. All right, so with that, we're going to be doing our session now on Secure Application Publishing with Internet Security and Acceleration Server 2006, or ISA for short. And with that, we're going to talk about what we're going to cover. So in this particular session, we're going to be looking at a variety of different topics as they're coming across screen here. ISA Server 2006, Outlook Web Access work together to provide some enhanced security for emails. We're going to be covering that topic. We're going to show you how to publish Outlook Web Access servers through ISA and how it protects your organization from that direct external access by hiding some of the information like the name and the IP address of the server from the end user. And that can also help diffuse attacks where people require that information for applications for hacking purposes. We're also going to talk about how ISA 2006 and SharePoint Portal Server, specifically version 2003, work together to enhance security and do things like provide your employees with access to all of the information on the portal. And we do this no matter where they're located out in the internet cloud without compromising security. We're also going to talk about how we significantly enhance the user experience by providing some single sign-on capabilities. So, for instance, when using multiple websites such as Outlook Web Access and SharePoint that you're being published out through ISA, the user doesn't have to repeatedly enter their sign-on credentials. So we'll talk about those features as far as publishing SharePoint and Outlook Web Access. In addition to this, we'll also talk about configuring and publishing out VPN servers and providing access to your environment through VPN connections and how we can inspect and terminate all of that at the ISA server. And then finally, we're going to talk about security solutions that are easy to monitor and manage with ISA Server 2006, so how we can save you some time and provide some additional resources here. All right. So some things you should know right now to get something out of this. So as we go through today's session, you're going to hear us talk about a variety of acronyms and terminologies, and that's very common in the Microsoft world. So I'm going to try to explain all of those as we go through the session. If I miss any of those acronyms, by all means, put a question into the queue. I'll be happy to help out with those, get those resolved. We're going to talk about, so having a familiarity with Windows Server 2003 certainly helps out with this. If you have an understanding around networking concepts, particularly TCP/IP and VPNs, that's going to be very helpful. And finally, if you've worked with, regardless of whether it's a Microsoft or a third party, any type of firewall application, that helps out. But in particular, if you've worked with previous versions of ISA Server, then you're going to be very familiar with what we talk about. All right. So first thing on our agenda we're going to be talking about, we're going to be reviewing the network configuration that I'm using for this particular discussion. So I have a slide that goes into that kind of configuration that we're looking at. After this, we're going to look at the publishing of the Outlook Web Access, and we'll talk about some of the design and security concerns that you might see. Then we'll talk about how ISIS Server 2006 uses link translations and what new features can be found in that particular area. Then we're going to talk about new support for load balancing, in particular publishing on a web farm. And then we'll cover how to configure publishing a variety of different servers, whether that's SharePoint, Outlook Web Access, a web server, or even a VPN server out through the ISIS server. And then we're going to wrap this all up with talking about monitoring and logging. All right, so a network overview. This basically for the purposes of today's discussion, when I'm talking about the different types of publishing, we're basing this on a three-leg perimeter network configuration. So essentially in this, what we're doing is we're trying to connect your internal network to the internet and still protect it from intruders while also publishing services that reside out in a perimeter network, such as a web server or a mail server. So essentially what we come down to with this are four different network areas, and the first of this is the internal network itself. This is where the client computers and other servers reside, and you want to protect those servers on the internal network. And this internal network will consist typically in the environment that we're discussing here of two machines, a domain controller and a Microsoft Operations Manager computer. In the perimeter network, which is the other area, it's usually set up separately from the rest of the networks. One of the advantages of having a perimeter network is that it allows your external users to access specific servers located in that perimeter network, such again as a mail server, a web server, something like that, while also preventing access to the internal corporate network where all of your sensitive data is located. So a perimeter network is also referred to as a DMZ or a demilitarized zone, or it can even be called a screened subnet. It just really depends on what part of the computing world you come from. For the purposes of this discussion, we'll be calling this a perimeter network, though. The perimeter network that I have that I'm going to be discussing here will contain two servers. There's an Exchange server and a SharePoint portal server. We also have a branch office that we'll use in part of this discussion as well. A remote network in this case is going to access through a site-to-site VPN connection over an external network. Located in this branch office will be a domain controller for that particular office for authentication purposes. And then finally, there is the external network. On the external network, that's everything outside of your control. It's all unmanaged. For the purposes of this, we have a single workstation that acts as a client computer that accesses things from the internet. We also have a headquarters site. There is an ISIS server at the headquarters site, and it provides the connectivity between our internal perimeter and external networks. There's also an ISIS server at that branch office that I mentioned earlier, and it provides access between the internal and the external networks. All right, so now that you have an idea of the layout of what I'm going to be discussing in this, let's go ahead and look forward at some of the next items here. We'll first talk about publishing Outlook Web Access, and you're going to have a pretty busy slide that comes up here in just a moment as this starts to build out. So in this example, the published servers that we have are Exchange and SharePoint. These are located on the internal network itself. So the remote user may use a laptop, a smartphone, an airport kiosk, some type of unmanaged home PC possibly. So let's look at the flow of this scenario on how this connectivity is going to take place. So connecting from one of these external sources, just to highlight these, so these external sources here, connecting from those particular machines, coming into our internal networks or accessing these particular resources, there it is, we have pre-authentication ensures that no packet that comes in arrives at the application servers before the remote user gets fully authenticated. So that's one of the jobs of the ISIS servers to provide that authentication. Now, strong pre-authentication uses a one-time or using a one-time pad device or a smart card is better protection against password theft. Now, the ISIS server can then authenticate on your behalf to the Exchange server in this case. The ISIS server processes the mail message page itself before forwarding it back to you, so we're actually doing some scanning both directions on this. And link translation that ISIS does makes sure that all of the links that you see and that you click on actually work. They aren't going to just simply die and end up with a 404. During this process, you are not prompted to re-enter your credentials to receive the SharePoint page or a Word document that's a part of SharePoint. The ISIS server handles the single sign-on operations, takes care of all of that transparently for you. If for some reason you leave your computer without logging out, and of course that is not recommended, the ISIS server has the ability to terminate that connection and drop that so that you don't have an open resource out in the internet or the unmanaged cloud that someone could compromise and then come in through your session. So ISA will terminate that connection for us automatically. So why would we want to use web publishing as opposed to placing a web server out directly on the internet? Well, to lead off on this, if you have a web server or any server publicly facing, its interface is out on the internet with a public IP, that server is subject to compromise without any other types of firewalling or authentication or scanning or anything of that nature, unless you start adding third-party tools or services or even Microsoft tools or services to check for those types of attacks that might be coming in. So the recommended way to publish these is to have the server behind a firewall and then use some sort of a publishing system like ISA to publish the ports and do either NAT mapping or port redirection back to those services to gain access from the outside world. So rather than using server publishing, we would want you to consider using the web publishing features of ISA to protect and the published websites that you have on your intranet or even on the extranet. So unlike server publishing, web publishing allows you to publish out multiple websites through a single IP address. So in some cases, depending on your ISP, they may charge on a per IP address basis depending on the size of your organization and what type of budgets you have. You know, that could be cost prohibitive. I know in my particular instance, I have a few static IPs at home, but I run multiple websites, multiple exchange servers, multiple services for friends and family, and so I have a limited number of IP resources to use. So this is very beneficial for me, or particularly for small, medium-sized businesses where you have a limited number of IP addresses that can be used. Now, in addition to this, the web proxy cache that ISA has included can deliver cached content out to the external client. That provides some increased performance as a part of this process as well. Now, the ISA web server publishing that we have supports all of the authentication methods that are provided by IIS. Oh, need to get my slides to catch up. There we go. And it can even pre-authenticate users before contacting the web server. So this is both an efficient and a secure methodology for publishing out these websites. Now, unlike server publishing, web publishing gets to take full advantage of mapping paths out to specific virtual directories or even applications on a back-end web server. Now, what this does for us is it prevents things like directory traversal attacks, and that's something where a hacker is able to break out of the web root directory itself, navigate into the file system by sending some sort of a malformed or corrupt packet into the system or through the HTTP headers and then gain access and compromise the system. And ISA can manage all of this for us. Now, ISA provides some very good security for your enterprise when you use it to publish out Outlook Web Access. And this is where we start to get into more of the application level security portion of this. So to define some terms here, ISA server being something called a bastion host. We'll highlight this up here in the corner. So the ISA server becomes something called a bastion host, and what this is just a gateway between the internal network and the external network that's on the outside of your organization that's unmanaged. And what this is what this does is it's designed to defend against attacks that are aimed at the inside of your network. So how do we manage all of this? So in our particular example here, we have an ISA server, we have several services behind the ISA server, and then of course the internet cloud out here where, you know, and typically that's where you see, at least from the media's perspective, the attacks coming from. Just be aware that attacks do come from within your organization as well, and you can actually use ISA server to cordon off specific services inside of your organization to help manage that as well. But in this example, an attack coming in from the outside world. So ISA server, and I'm going to get my slides to catch up again. There we go. So the web server or the ISIS server web proxy terminates all of the connections. It can decrypt HTTPS, which is just secure HTTP connections. And this is what's called SSL bridging, so secure socket layers bridging, and refers to the ability of the ISIS server to encrypt or decrypt client HTTPS requests and then pass those requests on to a destination web server. Now, the ISO web server proxy also can inspect that content, and using the SSL bridging instead of SSL tunneling for outgoing client requests, this increases security. So with SSL tunneling, the SSL tunnel passes through the ISO server without any type of inspection going on. With SSL bridging, we actually terminate the SSL connection at the ISO server. That then allows us to inspect the contents of the data stream that's coming in. We then make a determination on what we're going to be doing with that content. If everything is good, then we have the ability to re-encrypt that and then pass it on to its final destination. So again, we go through this process. It does increase the security of this. Finally, when we get through all of this process, the ISIS server simply re-encrypts for delivery out to Outlook Web Access. So in this next section, we're going to be talking about publishing out a SharePoint portal server. So we have some new policies inside of ISA 2006. And for those of you that haven't actually seen ISA 2006, but you have worked with ISA 2004, the interface is essentially the same. When you right-click on options, you'll have some additional publishing features. And one of the items that you'll see here in the tasks pane, just highlight this, is a specific option for publishing SharePoint sites. We also have one for publishing non-web server protocols, and those are new features as a part of the ISA 2006. So one of the interesting things inside of ISA 2006 is that it's now possible to publish SharePoint sites with the wizards that are built in. So in the past, you had to manually create a publishing rule for your SharePoint portal server sites. And then you had to read the SharePoint publishing website or the white paper that's on the Microsoft website to get a lot of details around that. So we've eliminated some of that work. We provide this information in the wizards right inside of ISA 2006. There we go. Waiting for my builds to come up. So there's highlighting again the publish SharePoint sites option. As I mentioned before, ISIS Server 2006 includes a link translation feature that you can use to create a dictionary of definitions for the internal computer names that map out to your publicly known names that you have inside of DNS that's publicly resolved. Also, ISA has the ability to implement link translation automatically during the web publishing process. Now, some web applications, they use absolute addresses for resources and hyperlinks inside of their web pages. So, for example, they may refer to server names or even server IP addresses to reference other images, other documents, other pages that are a part of this. So how do we deal with that? And that's through the link translation aspect of this. So more discussion on link translations. We have these multiple types of portals that are inside of our network. We have information portals. Maybe you have an internal HR site, Outlook Web Access. And this can become a problem when the web application itself is published through the ISIS server because typically it's going to get assigned an external public name that doesn't necessarily correspond to the internal server name. So, for example, the external public name may be something like webportal.contoso.com. While the internal server name, and therefore your internal website name, may be something very obscure like ny-web-01. And so those names don't map up, so we have to have something that translates that information for us. Now the problems on this can range from inaccessible web pages, images that don't populate because of a failed name or IP resolution issue. You can even have potential security flaws where a hacker could easily see internal server names and their IP addresses, thus exposing information about your internal corporate network structure that you may not want necessarily to leak into the outside world. This can also cause confusion to users that are on the intranet when the URL changes in the web browser address bar, if they actually look at that, and we all know that some of our end users don't. But for the ones that do, When they see those names change, you know, that may be a red flag and, of course, cause a little bit of confusion on this. So the SharePoint portal server and the Windows SharePoint portal services are a good example of web-based applications that use a mix of absolute names and IP addresses along with relative addresses that you have inside of your own network. So to resolve these issues, ISA provides a useful feature called link translation. It allows specific strings returned from the web server to be replaced with an alternate type of string. So, for example, you can specify that certain server names and IP addresses are replaced with externally accessible names of the published website. Now, in addition to this, the link translation features inside of ISA 2006, it's completely changed now from 2004, and it now supports additional character sets, and this is automatically activated when you create a web server publishing rule. So you can see from the screenshot here, we automatically check off this box to apply the links and the translations, and this is an automatic process. Okay, next on our agenda, and actually I'm going to take a look at the queue here just to look at the questions to make sure I don't get ahead of myself. Good question from Ted. Not understanding why we have to use the ISA 2006 for publishing SharePoint sites. Are you saying not to use site creation from SharePoint portal server? So on the internal network, you create a SharePoint site, and as long as people are accessing that from the internal network, it's not an issue. It's when you publish a SharePoint site that you're going to make available from the outside world. And that provides us the link translation feature so that we can access those internal documents, the shares, the libraries that we have inside of SharePoint. We can do that translation to provide that access to the outside world. Now, a lot of people don't actually publish SharePoint out. It's usually typically used on the internal networks. But just as an example, I used SharePoint Portal Server a couple of years ago for my fantasy football team. And I published out information around our stats and our information that we used during the season, and I wanted to publish that out. I had problems with link translation on my site because some of the reference points for images and other things were relative data. So it had internal names, internal IP addresses, and so they did not resolve correctly. So there was a lot of manual configuration that took place. So the publishing wizard that ISA 2006 provides does all of that for us automatically, and it makes it easier for administrators to publish that information out without all of the manual processes. So to address one other aspect of it, you do not have to use that wizard. You can certainly use the manual approach, but the wizard does simplify things greatly for the administrators. All right. So again, next on our agenda, publishing a web farm. Still waiting on my slides here, just a moment. There we go. All right, so configuring access and security for a large number of websites. This can be a very time-consuming process. Server farms or load balanced server farms make it possible to ensure that the resources are always available. It provides that high availability, so you have more than one server. There's some redundancy that's built into this. And it provides high availability when it's being accessed remotely. Now, ISA Server 2006 approaches the concept of the server farms much the same way that it does with the web listeners that we've used with ISA 2004 going forward. So a farm of servers can be defined as a network object and then used in many different publishing rules that you might want to set up inside of ISA Server 2006. ISA also now supports the publishing of load-balanced web servers. Now, load-balanced web servers are grouped in Unix units called a farm, and they provide continuous access and performance improvements over a single site or a single server scenario. Now, web applications and sites are often that get hosted on web farms, usually consisting of two or more web servers. This provides the benefits of increased availability and improves performance across this because the web requests from the external clients, those can be distributed across multiple web servers that all have identical information. Now, when you protect a web farm with ISA, you can use the ISIS server web publishing load balancing feature to distribute client requests between the web servers while still maintaining that client affinity. So we can still maintain the client connections. And we have some special items inside of the publishing wizards that address this if you have a farm of servers, or web servers in particular, that you need to publish out. That's highlighted here on screen. There we go. Now next, configuring VPN client access. Now publishing servers is not the only way to make your resources available to clients. You can also still allow VPN client access through the ISIS server, and it provides some additional layers of security. I mean, by nature, a VPN tunnel, your tunneling information, typically you'll encrypt that as well, and provide some additional layers so that if the data gets trapped, it's either encrypted or tunneled, and so that data has to be extrapolated, and so even if the data is caught, typically it's not very useful to someone with less than good intentions if they're trapping your data. So it also provides your roaming users with a consistent experience. It's typically a VPN, although it adds some overhead to the equation. It provides the same type of connectivity experience as being in the local office or connected to the corporate network to provide access to internal resources. So it is an alternative to doing publishing of these resources, and you may wish to choose that over publishing out web servers, et cetera, and do a VPN connection. So support for VPN client access. It's essentially unchanged from ISO 2004. It all starts with an access client or remote site gateway connects into an ISIS server, a computer. To emulate a point-to-point link, data gets encapsulated or tunneled or wrapped with a header that provides routing information. This allows the data to traverse the shared or a public network, such as the Internet, to reach its final endpoint. To emulate a private link, the data is encrypted for confidentiality. And assuming that the remote access client and the ISIS server both are using MS-CHAP or the standard CHAP authentication protocols, the ISIS server can send a challenge to the client for authentication. And the sending of the client credentials, those can vary for the different types of authentication protocols that you're actually using. So the client or the remote site gateway sends an encrypted response to the server. That consists of the username, domain name, and password, the standard credentials that we have. The server checks that response against the appropriate user accounts database and Active Directory. If the account is valid and the authentication credentials are correct and validated, the server uses the dial-in properties of the user account and the remote access policies to authorize the connection and grant access to internal resources. Finally, in the very tail end of our session here, it looks like I've got a couple more questions in the queue. Let me go ahead and check those before we move on. Good one from Mike S. What performance metrics are being considered? Mike, if you could frame that for a particular item, I would appreciate that. I don't know if you're speaking towards the balancing of a web farm, or if this is performance specifically to the number of users connected in through ISIS. So if you could give me a little bit more detail on that, I'd appreciate it. Another question. Radius servers are in ISA global configuration setting. Therefore, you can't specify a per rule basis which Radius servers use for authentication. And I do believe that is correct, Stefan. So I tell you what I'll do is I will research that towards the tail end of the session. And if I can get a live answer to you, I certainly will. Otherwise, I'll get my email address posted up again. And if you want to send that to me, I can get some research information and get that back to you in email. But I'm going to keep that one highlighted so I can research that at the end of the session. Okay. So monitoring published resources. So monitoring and alerting inside of ISIS Server 2006. Now, we have the ability to delegate some administrative control out using some role-based permissions. And some of the strong points around this is delegating out the ability to do monitoring and alerting without granting total control over creating the rules or the site connectivity inside of ISIS itself. So you could actually delegate out permissions for simply providing reporting capabilities. Now, the reporting capabilities inside of ISIS server give the administrator a real-time view of firewall activity that enables things for troubleshooting and monitoring user activities. Now, that's a pretty powerful and flexible alerting system, and it's used to help warn administrators of problems or even suspicious activity that may be going on. So, for example, an ISIS server may issue alerts when it detects an intrusion attempt, and we do have a number of intrusion detection filters inside for things like SMTP, DNS, etc., that you can take and adjust for the alerting capabilities to provide alert mechanisms out, either through a email system, through paging, through the built-in chat systems in the Windows OS. All of those can be used for alerting mechanisms, as well as scripted type alerting functions. So as I mentioned before, an example, an ISIS server could issue those alerts out when it detects an intrusion attempt, or we can actually do network connectivity type tests as well. So you can actually set up a connectivity verifier between the ISIS server and a website, and we will check on a periodic basis to make sure that that website is active. If it goes off for a select amount of time, then we can generate an alert to notify an administrator or to even fire off a script that could stop and start services or even reboot a server for us automatically to try and bring it back online and then alert us ultimately if it doesn't become available after, again, a preset amount of time. Now, you can configure the alerts to simply write an entry out to the event log. You can send the alerts out to administrators, and I've already talked about sending them out through email. This logging can gain or provide a lot of very, very useful information, and we also have some reporting capabilities that help make sense of the log data that we collect. So, speaking of the reporting, now while the log data itself that we create is very powerful, it contains a lot of great information, it can become information overload, and to be honest, the log files that get created aren't typically the most user-friendly log files in the world, and so the built-in reporting sections of ISA take care of this, formatting it out, providing us some charts and some good information that makes it much easier for people to read in this information. So ISA server contains some built-in reporting capabilities, and this allows our administrators to create some basic summary reports of firewall activity, for instance. These reports are based upon the ISA server logs that we collect, but they're much more readable, as I had mentioned. They contain information that's useful for analysis and for planning. Now, the log files contain all types of information on different types of traffic that we have. We even contain information about user activity, potential security problems, and more. So again, it provides that summary of firewall activity, all the detailed information. The reporting can be scheduled out, so you can create the reports at scheduled intervals, and let's say you know that you have a quarterly meeting that you need to generate information for. You can have these reports generated for you prior to those meetings on a scheduled basis so that you have access to that data for review before going in. The reports are all viewable through web browsers, so it provides a relatively technologically agnostic capability of reviewing this information, and you don't have to be seated at the ISA server to gather all of this information either. You can publish these out and make them available through other workstations if you would like. If you want to do further analysis on this, administrators can export all of the report data out into other programs. So we have the ability to report out into Microsoft Excel, for instance. So you can manipulate that data, filter that data, sort that data much more easily, and glean out just the information that we need. So in summary of this session, we've talked about how ISA server can impersonate an internal server through a reverse proxy process known as publishing. This adds a layer of security at the network edge of the server. In addition to this, security breaches due to a misconfiguration are limited by a variety of new and improved wizards that we have that we can make use of. So again, to go back to that SharePoint publishing wizard, it helps eliminate a misconfiguration that might take place during a rather lengthy or tedious manual configuration of that publishing. So that's another benefit to using the wizards. Web publishing inside of ISA Server 2006, it's much more secure, it's much more flexible than your traditional web publishing. And this is because ISA Server has the ability to inspect the HTTP content before it reaches the web servers, and it provides just an additional element to that defense in depth strategy that you've heard us talk about for quite some time now. It can also be used as a central location to block disallowed websites or requests, which is much easier to configure than using each web server individually. And ISA Server also processes only the allowed URLs and block any disallowed or invalid HTTP syntax or commands that may be getting passed, so we can filter all of that. We can also block based on signatures inside of HTTP requests or in the responses that come back through the system. We also provide some additional flexibility because it can make web forwarding decisions based upon the content of the request. So based upon what's coming in, we can then forward that on to the appropriate web server. And this also means that organizations can easily publish multiple websites using just that single IP if they need to, and that the multiple websites behind the ISA server can appear as a single website or a single web farm to those that are approaching it from the internet. We also build upon some of the basic functionality that was introduced inside of ISA 2004, which enable us to optimize and secure our web publishing scenarios. This includes our SharePoint technologies that we have through the SharePoint Publishing Wizard. Of course, we're maintaining the Outlook Web Access publishing, and then the publishing of multiple websites, and then the addition of web farms on this. Now, if you want some more information on these products and technologies, you can go out. Oh, I'm one slide ahead of everything, I think. Let me go ahead and bring that up. Well, that's all the TechNet information. What I'm trying to do is get to our ISA information slide. Let me locate that real quick. Well, doesn't appear we have it. So let me place this manually here on screen. So Microsoft.com/ISA. That is the core site for ISA Server 2006. If you haven't been out to the site and you weren't aware of this, ISA Server 2006 is an available product. We did release the product back the early part of September of this year, and so it is an available product for purchase and use right now. If you want more information on this specific session, then you can go out to Microsoft.com/TechNet/Sec04. And we have a whole series of content and webcasts around the ISA product. So there's the introduction to the ISA server product. There's some additional resources on this particular session on the application publishing, as well as some other content that's out there. I would encourage you to go out and look at that. With that, I'm going to pass it back to Eric for the basic wrap-up. I do have some questions in the queue that I'm going to go ahead and try to address before we wrap up this session.
Okay, thank you, Chris. I have posted the survey for everyone. I do encourage you to fill it out. If you like, there are two options, register online and all other registrants. If the register online doesn't work for you, I suggest trying the all other registrants option. That should pass you right on through. And we really encourage you to fill out the survey and give us some feedback. There is also a section on there for comments on the survey, and we do read those. So I encourage you, if you have any comments about it, it really helps us out, lets us know how we're doing. Chris, I see you got a number of questions in the queue. Would you like to answer some of those?
Yeah, I'm just reviewing a couple of those. I'm going to try and pull up a basic document here real quick. But while I'm doing that, while I'm kind of searching for that in the background, Rob has a question. Do you have those links again? Oh, I'll wait a second. Ken, I believe you're asking for the links that I provided. So I'll go ahead and type that one up. I'll type that one up and provide that into the text so we get that captured for everybody's benefit. But the basic ISA site is Microsoft.com/ISA, and the site that has the additional resource materials is Microsoft.com/TechNet/SEC-04, and that's for this specific session. So Rob has a question on going all the way back to ISA Server 2000. So the web proxy logs had the FQDN, the fully qualified domain name, in the log. ISA Server 2004 only displays the IP of the website. does ISA 2006 log the FQDN info? So, Rob, that's actually a configurable option. You can go into the logging features and turn on or off what features you want to log. So you can actually strip the logs down so they only record very basic information or expand those out. Recording of the fully qualified domain name or the host name of the source or destination servers is one of those check boxes. You just simply check that box and do that. And unfortunately, I don't have an ISA image here where I can go in and show that. But if you want the specific area of that, send me an email. I'll be happy to send that out to you and provide the steps on where to enable that logging feature. There is a question here from Paul. Can you go over the changes between ISA Server 2004 and 2006? So I'm actually waiting on a document to come up that has a real nice summary of that because I want to make sure I don't miss all of these. So if you can give me just a moment, I'll come back and address that. Mike, in regards to load balancing of web farms, what performance metrics are being considered in the load balancing? Is it a simple connection-based, or are there other performance metrics considered when performing this type of publishing? So think of it this way. The ISA server itself, when we do the publishing of the web farm, we do the load balancing at the ISA server. So it will take, or we can do part of the load balancing at the ISA server. So as the connections come in, the ISA server can kind of round robin those connections out. At this point, if you just kind of strip off the concept that the ISA server is a firewall and consider that it is also a router, it just has the ability to do the scanning of the packets at the application level, et cetera, then it's simply acting as a router, and instead of sending all of the connections to one particular server, it's load balancing those out, and it can actually take and send, let's say we have four servers. As the connection is in, it sends the first one to one, the next one to two, the next one to three, next one to four, and then it rings them back to one as the additional connections come in. So there will be a certain amount of hardware consideration on the ISA server itself, which is not unlike what we already have to consider for the number of connections that are coming in. And you can get those statistics off of the ISA site as far as the recommended hardware configurations based upon what you might want to do with ISA. All right, so I'm still waiting on this document to come up, which I do apologize for the delay on this. Let's see if I can grab this. So I can tell you that on the surface, the ISA 2004-2006, the interface is relatively unchanged, so there's not going to be a big learning curve there. We have the additional publishing wizards that are involved with this, the ability to publish out the SharePoint servers directly, the ability to publish out and manage connections to web farms. We also have some additional options for handling the SSL bridging and the SSL tunneling features, so some of that has been extended out as well. And this pesky document just simply does not want to open up, so I apologize for not being able to grab that and run through all of the specific features on this. So I tell you what, I'm going to try and close out my browser and bring this up, and while I'm doing that, I will check our question queue again. Just have to click before coming back. There we go. Awesome. All right, so it's opening up in the background now. So what were the links again? I'm going to go ahead and type those up and put those into our question manager screen. So links are, so I'm going to give you my email address as well, which is chris.avis@microsoft.com. The microsoft.com/ISA site, and additional resources will be microsoft.com/technet/SEC-04. All right, so we've got all of those in there. And it looks like I spoke a little bit too soon on that document coming up, so I think I'm going to end up having to just wing this and see if I can't get as many of these resources in as possible as far as what has changed in the basic application. Forgive me, I'm kind of stalling here. I'm going to see if I can get it to come back up. But apparently it's not going to play fair with me. So off the top of my head, so some of the things that are new or improved is the link translation, which we discussed. We have the ability to do HTTP compression, which enables us to reduce the file sizes that are transferred. We have some new algorithms that help eliminate some of the data that gets repeated as a part of the HTTP stream. We mentioned the web publishing, the load balancing of the web publishing. So with ISIS Server 2006, we can automatically balance those requests that are coming in from remote users to some array of published servers that we have on the back end. We do bits caching, so background intelligence transfer service caching. That provides a updated caching mechanism for the data that we're receiving in through bits. So if we have some sort of a rule that we create, or we can create a cache rule, excuse me, with bits to enable that, to enable the caching of the bits data. Let's see, what else do we have? Forms-based authentication is a question that comes up. That's still there. We have made some improvements on that. It's available actually for more than just the Outlook Web Access site. We can do this with other types of websites that require authentication. We have some updated session management for cookie-based type sessions that we have. This can help improve some security. We also have some improved authentication management inside of ISA 2006 so that we can use other types of authentication through LDAP, RSA Secure ID type authentication, even Radius authentication. We can do front-end, back-end server configurations separately on this to provide some more flexibility for this type of thing as well. We have a new feature called Flood Resiliency inside of ISA 2006, and it helps protect the ISA server itself from completely going offline in the case of a denial of service attack. And it also helps prevent it from becoming unmanageable. Certain servers under DOS attacks, you can't even connect to them to do basic management to, say, shut off a port. And so we've built in some features around that flood resiliency inside of ISA 2006. We already talked about the wizards that have been updated, so I think I've covered that. And I, off the top of my head, those are the things that I can recall that are the differences. If you go out to the Microsoft.com/ISA site, there is some documents out there that have a very nice chart that shows some of the updates and improvements on this. One other thing I will mention is that ISA Server is available as a standalone software product, or you can actually buy hardware-based appliances with ISA Server, both the standard or the enterprise editions, pre-configured, pre-installed, and they're actually pre-hardened as well. So all of the unnecessary services are stripped off. You're essentially a hardware-based firewall that's using ISA as the firewall, and you remotely administer that. So that's another feature. And you can look at the ISA site on how to purchase or get a hold of vendors that may be able to offer those types of solutions for you. So with that, we're actually no more questions in the queue other than Stefan, if you want to send me an email on that just to remind me so that I can respond back to you, I can get some clarification on how we process those rules for the Radius server-based authentication. So I would like to thank everyone for taking your time out for the webcast today. Go out to Microsoft.com/webcasts. You'll see this webcast posted in about 24 to 48 hours, and you can download an offline version of this for review if you would like, as well as locate other webcasts out at Microsoft.com/webcasts. So thank you again very much for all your time. I'm going to pass it back to Eric now.
I do want to thank Chris Avis for presenting today. Thank you, everyone, for attending today's webcast. That concludes today's TechNet webcast. You may now disconnect from the audio portion of this conference.
Hello. Thank you for listening to this webcast. We value your feedback, so please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio.com/survey to complete a quick evaluation. Thank you.